Hello, and welcome to episode 21 of Professors in Rooms Getting Coffee with Dr. Justin Winsenberg and me, Stephen Jones. Thank you for joining us for the final episode of season one. So I thought today it might be interesting to just kind of reflect back on the summer. And, you know, we're at this pivot point between summer and the start of the school year. And so I thought maybe it'd be interesting to ask you, first of all, what is the best cup of coffee you've had this summer?
Man, that is a tricky question. What's unfortunate is, you know, with the coronavirus, I haven't been to a lot of coffee shops that I may have ventured out to. What I have done though is I've ventured quite closely to home. And unfortunately, that means some of the big names, the big name coffee shops. It's not unfortunate, but...
Because you have two just right around the corner.
Yeah.
Two
of the big names. And I go to both of them and I really enjoy both of their coffees. But what that means is I haven't gotten to some of the more, you know, niche coffee shops, especially ones... Mm-hmm. There's some incredible coffee shops in St. Paul. So my answer would be one of those. or in an idyllic world, my answer would be, well, you know, I had a chance to go to Italy this summer and I drank coffee there. Now that would be the right answer. So actually your question is a little bit tricky. What I've done though is I've experimented with various forms of making coffee at home. You're familiar with all of them, you know, using the using the pour over, using the French press, using the espresso, little, you know, twisty espresso
mocha pot. You didn't get one of the siphon brewers, did you?
I did not, no.
I've always been curious to try one of those. They just look so cool, but
I'm really tempted to get like an actual espresso machine, but I hear that you got to get a really quality one in order for it to be worth your while. And I just don't think I can, swing it.
can't justify that.
Can't justify it. So I think, I guess if I'd have to answer, one of those major coffee shops has one of my favorite drinks that I get all the time. And it's always good.
What is it?
Well, it's from Dunn Brothers. So there you go. I'm giving it away. Can you guess? it's the iced vanilla Nirvana, or the vanilla iced Nirvana, I think is.
Well, you have three of the big name coffee shops around you.
All three of the major big names. So we got Dunn Brothers, we got Caribou, we've got Starbucks all within.
No Dunkin' though.
No Dunkin', no. So anyhow, this is terrible for me to say because it's just such a, it's so commercialized in some ways, but it is a wonderful drink. But I had some good cups of coffee at home. I am bummed though to say that I can't give a wonderful answer in light of the fact that I've been prohibited a bit from going to some of the real great coffee shops in St. Paul. Mm-hmm. How about for you?
You know, I feel kind of similarly limited. My favorite coffee experience in general is to get a little double espresso in a ceramic cup, a little cup, you know.
Yeah.
And because of the virus, they've been serving that in the paper cups.
Oh, it's not the same.
It's not the same. And our local coffee shop here, we've got one, we just walk right across. There's a little pedestrian bridge to downtown. And it's just this whole experience, right? You walk across the river, go downtown to the local coffee shop, and there's this little, you know, cup of espresso waiting there. And it's just delightful. And I haven't had that since March And I miss it. You know, it's like, I don't know, but I have had some really good coffee. I think I mentioned before that I had been buying some from Colorado from Switchback Coffee Roasters, and they had some really good stuff. We've switched now to smaller local stuff, but, and I don't mean locally roasted. That would be nice. It's smaller local, like as in from our grocery store. But there was some really good Guatemala coffee we had from there. So anyway.
Nice. Duluth Trading Company, they've got some good coffee. And when we end up going up north, I try to pick some up. They've got a Papua New Guinea that's really good. And the best cup of coffee I've ever had in my life was in Papua New Guinea. I think I maybe mentioned that in a different episode. But so I try to get their beans because their beans are really good.
Now, do you ever do the coffee with the, do you like it with a lot of sugar in it? Or do you prefer?
No, when I've been at school, I try not to. I just drink straight black coffee. When now that I've been at home, I doctored up a little bit, and it's probably not good for me to do so. But when I drink iced coffee, I almost always put some like simple syrup and cream in it. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, normally during the regular semester, I'm drinking just black coffee.
I feel like otherwise the calories add up quickly.
They do. Is that you try to avoid it then, or?
Yeah, I do though. I really like Turkish coffee, that even gritty sometimes and has the, but very sweet, but I almost never have that. So Well, I wanted to ask you about highlights, lowlights, and insights for the whole summer.
Yeah. Oh.
So what's a highlight for the summer been for you?
Well, the highlight of the summer for me has been finishing my PhD program. And we mentioned this a little bit in past episodes, but I don't know if maybe all of our listeners realize how agonizing of a process that was for me. I think I did mention in one episode that it took me 11 years to finish. I had been working.
That's really something, isn't it?
It is. I was working full-time for the last 5 years, which is it's hard to do PhD work and work full time. Mm-hmm. It's not built for that. In fact, I think a lot of PhD programs really discourage you from it. But job opportunity opened up, and I took it. So that has been an agonizing process in a lot of ways. When I started the program, we had a cohort of folks in Minneapolis who were doing it together, and we had some folks who dropped out. We had other folks who graduated, and then I was kind of one of the last man standing, last people standing. And then a few others that kind of joined along the way that I didn't really know all that well. So that made it challenging, man. I do not recommend ever doing a PhD education as a sort of soloist where you're basically just by yourself all the time. Mm-hmm. Clearly your work has to be your own. I mean, that's just academic integrity, but you need right. the support of other folks in a program or a similar program that you can talk with and that you can, you know, we've had some of that, honestly, since I started working and you and I have gotten to know each other, you've been, I think, one of the biggest supporters of people I've talked with. But you know, our programs differ in a lot of ways in terms
in
terms of the logistics. And so, you know, it's nice to have somebody who's in the same program as you, who's going through the same administrative hurdles and all of the other things that come with that. You know, what's crazy is when, so I was in a very unique program. Some people think I was on like this online program, but actually I was a full-time student in the UK, but just living in the US, and I got all my, you know, research materials from libraries here in the cities. But that created a lot of financial hurdles and challenges because there were some logistical things that the government didn't work out very well. So a lot of the loans that were normally accessible for people in PhD programs, even for US students in UK PhD programs, were not accessible for me.
Wow.
So it was tricky, man. There's just a lot of hurdles, but I made it through. I made it through financially. I made it through in terms of completing, and I even maybe wrote a decent dissertation. Who knows?
Well, it sounds like, I mean, you've gotten some good feedback on it.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's
I don't think I've seen it yet.
Oh man, I have it here in the office, and I'm telling you, it is a monster of a book. Part of it was I'm not quite sure why they didn't tell me that when you get it bound that you should do double-sided printing. Like they do.
Were you allowed to? I don't think I was allowed to in my master's thesis.
I don't think I was allowed to either. So it's single-sided, which is fine, but why not make it double-sided? I mean, it trims the pages down by half.
It makes it look more impressive if it's single-sided. So
it is. I'm telling you, I think I have dictionaries and encyclopedias in my office here. It is the heaviest book that I have in my office.
Is your dissertation?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And that's not necessarily because it's the longest. It's just that all the binding and everything, the way they make you do it, I'll show it to you when you come in. So yeah, it's here. But anyhow, that was such a highlight for me. And I can't tell you the weight off of my shoulders in a lot of ways that it's provided.
It's off of your shoulders and into that volume.
Yeah, exactly. It is into that volume. The weight is. Yeah. How about for you? What's been your highlight for the summer?
I think it's been, so a little over a year ago, my uncle came out and helped us redo the deck.
Yeah.
And so Jenny and I have had some just really nice times through the summer, sitting on the deck, drinking coffee, and then watching the seasons change, right? Like watching it move into the growing season, see all the flowers come up, see all the leaves come out and everything. And then, you know, now watching all that mature into the kind of late summer here, and even starting to get a couple of hints of fall as things are ending their season. And I just, something about being in that space, you know, we've been in this house coming up on 6 years, and we've only had one summer that we've really been able to use that deck. Cause when we got here, it was in pretty bad shape, and it's really just been so nice. It's amazing what a difference those little things can make.
And for like your mental health, right? Like getting
exactly, because it's been a fairly stressful 6 months or so. And to be able to spend that time, you know, to decompress a little bit outside, and I can't do much in the way of meaningful work out there, and that's good, you know, to have a space that I can't do much and enjoy being out there. So yeah,
that's great. So what has been some of the biggest hurdles then for you in terms of the summer? Or what would you call it? Biggest downer or biggest?
Oh, the low light.
The low light.
Yeah.
What's the biggest low light for you been this summer?
I think the biggest one would be I had three different injuries.
And
So I rolled my ankle at the beginning, and I'd been making good progress on health. I'd been exercising quite a bit, and that just really set me back. And then about a week or two after I was kind of better from that is when I got the cut on my hand. Which just totally set me back on my dissertation. Mm-hmm. And then just kind of this dumb little thing. But a week or two ago, the dog was sitting with me and some dog walked by, and my dog, you know, we've been trying to teach her to be less reactive, you know, but it's a long journey, you know, for her. And she kind of whipped her head back and split my lip. And it got all, I don't know, it's just like one of these things. It doesn't really matter. My lip's fine, but for about a week, it hurt to chew and stuff like that. Yeah. Like, you know, I'm just kind of tired of being not 100%, if that makes sense.
For sure.
So it's interesting how each of those little things set me back in an area that was important to me, right? Huh. Like, so the ankle set me back in my physical health. The hand set me back in my ability to be productive. And then, you know, even my ability to enjoy, you know, drinking coffee or eating food was impacted by this little injury to my mouth. So that I think has been probably a low light personally for me. I do think more broadly, you know, outside of myself and my own little world, that there's been this low light of feeling like, I don't know, I just watching the way that the American church is interacting with major things that matter in the world. Sometimes I've just been really discouraged this summer. Other times I've been very encouraged, but there have definitely been some things where I'm just like, man, what are we doing? So anyway, how about you? What's a low light?
Lately. You know, I guess, yeah, I'll go self-centered here in some ways. my low light, I think, has been a realization I've started to come to about myself, which relates to parenting. My kids are good kids. I mean, my infant son, you know, I mean, he's just a baby, but I'm realizing that there are ways that I'm wired, and even ways that maybe I've inherited, just certain ways of being a parent that aren't always helpful to handling my kids. And it's not no criticism against my own parents, man. I think my parents did a lot right. So it's not really so much that, but it's just like default modes that I find myself getting into when my kids are crying or misbehaving. And then I realized that, like, I hope I'm a good dad, but I also realize that there are ways that I am much more easily frustrated with parenting than I am with other areas of life. Like, certainly that I am with teaching, certainly in ways that I am with even friendships, but there are frustrations I think that occur in parenting that I don't know how well I was prepared for. And I don't really know how to handle it. Or there's times where I know how to handle it, but then I don't always go to that mode initially.
Oh, which makes it hard, because then you have the self-judgment too with it, right?
Exactly. Because I'm like, why did I handle it that way? And you know, kids are resilient. I think I remember moments when I was growing up where my parents would apologize for having handled something this way or that. And a lot of those scenarios, I don't really even remember concretely. So I think it's maybe the posture that matters more than the actual, I did this and shouldn't have done it that way, you know. But man, it's parenting is hard.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine it gets easier the older kids get. And I can't imagine any of those feelings go away when your kids are even out of the house, you know. Like,
I don't think there's ever a point where you arrive and you're like, no. Okay, now I got this down.
No way.
Because it's a constantly changing target, right?
I remember one of our colleagues, though, talking about his dad. And he was, his dad, I think, had recently passed away. And he talked about how he thinks of his dad every day and how much he misses his dad. And I caught him in the hallway one day, and I was like, man, I'm like, what did your dad do? I'm like, I want to be that dad. I'm like, your dad must not have been perfect. And he's like, oh, no. You know, and he went on and on about like all the, even some of the imperfections of his dad. But he's like, but my dad loved me and I knew it, and I miss him, you know. And I was like, that's it. Like, that's what I want for my kids. Like, I'm going to mess up, I'm sure, in how I handle this or that scenario, or if I get frustrated or angry in this circumstance. But like, I hope that when they step back and at the end of my life, they look back and they have similar sentiments as our colleague, because I'm like, man, that's a dad whose kids know that he loved them.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't know what he did exactly, but I want some of that.
Right. So well, what's an insight been for you summer?
I mean, there's been a lot, and I mean, we could go in all sorts of directions here. You know, this is going to maybe sound a little self-serving or even promotional, but I think I've realized in stuff when it comes to issues of race, when it comes to even talking through questions about COVID and its controversy, or whether it is some of the things I brought up about history in looking mm-hmm. at, you know, some of the history here in Minnesota. I think what I realize is I do firmly believe that there's a place for academics and for higher ed and in the world. And we do a lot wrong, I think, in higher ed. And we have a lot of hurdles that we need to reconfigure and figure out. But we're severely losing out in society, I think, if we do not have people who can navigate critical thinking and research, and even research in some non-technical ways. And I'm not suggesting higher ed is the only means that can provide those sort of things, but it's certainly one of our goals. Mm-hmm. And when we're doing it well, I think we can contribute a lot to society. So I'm hopeful in that sense. The trick is how can we perpetuate those skills in our students in ways that society says, yeah, I need a little bit of that too.
Right. One thing I'm looking forward to actually along those lines is the next couple of weeks, we've got some guests coming in that I think are going to help us think through some of that. And I think, I'm looking forward to that.
I am too. How about for you? What's an insight?
So I think there are two things that are intertwined for me. One is the importance of regular reflection. So I think so this podcast for me has been something that I've started to really look forward to.
Yeah.
And I think one of the reasons that it feels like it's been such a healthy part of the summer for me, or for the last little while for me, is just pausing to reflect, right? To ask each other, what's your highlight, lowlight, insight, right? Just to every week have this expectation that there was something worth noticing and thinking about. And also then to say, hey, there's probably some voice, somebody out there who's saying something, thinking something that's worth reflecting on. And I think just that, I don't know, I haven't experienced it as a discipline. Mm-hmm. You know, I think sometimes we would apply that language to it, but in a way it has been, right? We have this discipline of, okay, let's make sure we get the person contacted and get things scheduled. Yeah, right? Yeah. There are elements of that, but I've experienced it much more as just kind of this very natural point of reflection. And I think that that's been a really good thing. I think the other thing with that has been, you know, this summer has been a time of pretty significant disruption mm-hmm. in a lot of ways. And I mean, obviously our listeners know that, right? Yeah. this is, you know, a basically universal experience. And it's not just here in the US either, right? Like I have friends in Mali and they just experienced a coup d'etat this week, you know, I mean, which is the second in 8 years. You know, there's just obviously the thing in Lebanon, right? There, and the list would be really long if we stopped to actually think through all that disruption. And I think one of the things that's been encouraging for me is looking at the question of, okay, if our faith is real, right? Like if our faith is dependable, if we've put our faith in a trustworthy place, right, in Christ, then there's no issue that should be able to come up that we'd be able to, there's nothing that should come up where we're like, yeah, I don't really know if my faith has anything to say about this. Mm-hmm. And I think in some ways this pattern of reflecting on, okay, what does Jesus-centered faith, you know, have to say about this, has been really good. It's been really encouraging. And I think over and over again, as much as there has been a lot of unrest and a lot of things that feel unsettled, I feel encouraged because I'm like, I feel like even when, you know, when my personal finances or when the social discussion of race or whatever, when any of that stuff feels unsettled, I think at the same time, like, I feel like my feet are on pretty solid ground. So I don't know.
Isn't there, to me, sometimes there's this distinction between does my faith have anything to say on this? Yes. Does my faith's tradition or does my faith community's version of that always, is it always the most helpful?
Oh, sometimes it's miserable.
That's right. That's the distinction. I think I don't want, you know, I don't want to say, oh no, everything that we're inheriting and we're hearing from people of faith are somehow helpful.
No, sometimes it's terrible.
Yeah, I think that distinction is important.
Yeah, I think that actually, so the distinction you're making between, I think that there's something really important there. I think to the extent that my faith is in the institutions or in the inherited expressions of faith, I will be regularly disappointed and have been, right? But yeah, to the extent that our faith is in a living person, I think, I don't know, there's something really encouraging and rich there.
For sure.
and the words are too weak and insufficient anyway.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting you talk about reflection even, and I'm thinking like, man, there are times throughout the week now that we do this regularly where I'll have this little, almost the startings of a nugget of an insight that'll come into my head. And a lot of times I think, you know, if I were busy or in the middle of something, I'd kind of just push it aside. Now that I know that we've got an insight we have to talk about, I'm kind of like, think about this because I might have to say something. You know, it's a helpful process.
Mm-hmm. You have any hopes for the coming year?
Man, hopes for the coming year. Now that's a heavy one. I mean, it can go in a lot of different directions, professional hopes, but also family hopes. Okay, one just kind of simple one. I hope that we're not in the same spot with COVID next summer as we've been this summer.
Amen.
There you go. How about for you?
Well, that's it. Okay. I guess that's a big hope. I mean, you know, and again, maybe this risks sounding self-serving, but you know, we've been working on starting this institute through the business, and I have this hope that it'll work. I think, yeah, trying to apply some of the principles and ideas to some practical issues, and I don't know. I hope it works.
I hope so too.
Hope we get, you know, people enrolled and all that.
Great.
How about a fear for you for the coming year?
Fear. Oh boy.
I suppose that we're in the same spot a year from now would be one.
There you go. That's exactly it. We're in the same spot as we were a year ago. You know, I don't know. I tend to gravitate towards fears more naturally than I do hopes. Mm. And yet I off the top of my head at the moment, I can't think of one that sticks out to me. But what you're saying actually is a somewhat legitimate one, you know, right? In that if my hope is that we won't be at that spot next year, my fear is that we would be. And I'm not saying that in a sense of like, you know, a terror, but I am saying it and like, I'm a little concerned about where we might be at in society for a lot of different reasons if we are in a similar or worse spot with COVID as we have been this past year. So how about for you?
Yeah, I think a fear that I have is that the church would not, I'm afraid that the church is not going to carry itself well through the election season. So
now that's a good one. I wish I had said that.
So, well, it'll be interesting to see where this all goes. I'm looking forward to the kind of the next season that we have with this podcast coming up.
And, yeah, for sure.
So cool. Great. Well, yeah. Talk to you.
Sounds good.
Later.
It's been fun.
Thank you again for joining us for season one of Professors in Rooms Getting Coffee. We'll plan to be back with you next week with the first episode of season two. For more information on the podcast, check out propsinrooms.com. Our theme music is by Josiah Enns. We hope you can join us for coffee again next week.